You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for joining us today here on the Locked On Jets podcast. It is Tuesday, June 5th, 2018, and I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to it. You can do that on iTunes or Spotify, and please leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Well, I am back from my trip to San Diego. Very nice. Got to see my nephew. Great trip. Joining us today is Mike Nania. He writes for me at gangrenenation.com. Mike, thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me. Good to be back on.
And the topic we are going to discuss today is the coverage the Jets played in 2017. Michael's been doing a week-by-week roundup of how Jets defenders performed in coverage in 2017. He's been going into a deep dive into the film. I think he's about three-quarters of the way through the season. So great series. You should check it out on GangreneNation.com. Michael, let's talk. What are some of your top initial reactions to what you've seen?
I think one of the big things about just the overall going through it and how we interpret the numbers is that football is kind of a game where every little thing that happens, there are so many different factors that go into it. So even with every single pass that I assign to one player, there could be a mistake that another player makes, maybe being late to help, maybe a lack of a pass rush. So the numbers are really interesting to look at. And overall, you do want to see, it's great to see when a player does well, limits the opposing passer rating, limits first downs. And it's disappointing to see them struggle, but overall, there is definitely a lot more that goes into it than the numbers show, but it's still really, really interesting thing to look at.
Absolutely. And you know, that's one of the things that I don't love about Pro Football Focus grades. They have that system where they grade 1 to 100, and people cite it as gospel. But the thing I've always argued is there are so many different things, factors that go into each play, and you're just getting one person's view. And not that one person's view has no value, but you know, any person may miss something. It's just one of the criticisms I've always had of that system.
Yeah, you're right. And that's one of the things that I've been trying to do with this. I am tracking the amount of plays that where guys have been burnt and have been lucky to not give up a touchdown or a first down, but it's still really good to look at overall just to see who's giving up the most touchdowns, who's been the most targeted by the other teams. So it doesn't capture everything, and that's why I do like to give a couple plays to kind of give a representation of what was going on that game. Was the opposing quarterback struggling? Were the Jets really playing a good scheme that to beat the other team? Or was a guy really actually playing good football and shutting the opposing team down? So it's good to know, look at it from all perspectives, not just the numbers, but getting a look at what's actually happening.
And what's interesting about your study is that you're not just looking at the 2017 Jets. You're looking at how guys performed who are going to be on the Jets this year, like Trumaine Johnson. So what are some of your takeaways from what you've seen so far?
Yeah, from Trumaine Johnson, I think it's really interesting what he's done. He's been targeted more than any player on the Jets roster last year was. He spent most of his time covering the opposing number one receiver. He's not like a 2009 Revis where he's going to shadow him all over the field, because he does mainly play on the left side, Trumaine Johnson. About two-thirds of his snaps are on the left side, but he does take most of his snaps against the opposing team's best receiver. And for the most part, the production you've gotten out of him, considering he does get targeted so often against really good receivers, you have to like. And I'm through three-quarters of the season right now, about 10 games, and his quarterback rating when targeted is 69.7, and that's really solid. But I think you have to look a little bit beyond that one number, because he hasn't given up a touchdown yet to this point, and he does have two picks. And that's really great, but the thing that's concerning with me is his yards per attempt is 8.6, and he's given up 25 first downs, which is 42% of his targets. And those numbers are, that's higher than Buster Screen, and higher than, the yards per attempt is higher than any other corner of the Jets roster, and the first down rate is higher than most of them. So I think the reason for those two numbers is that he was kind of out of place in the new scheme the Rams played defensively last year. He was playing a lot of off-man coverage, which I don't think is really his strong suit. So he was giving up a lot of underneath first downs that would go for 15, 20 yards. But for the most part, he's really good in the red zone. That's why he's limited to touchdowns. And he does make a lot of plays on the ball. And that keeps his completion percentage allowed down. He's only given up 55% completion rate. And that's better than any Jet who actually got a decent amount of targets last year. So I think that is how I would summarize the pluses and minuses of his numbers.
Okay, so let me put you on the spot and understand that if you get this wrong, you'll never hear the end of it from people who listen to this podcast, because that's just the way that's just the way it goes down. Have your impressions of the contract the Jets gave him changed as you've studied him deeply?
I think that before they signed him, I was kind of against it. I even actually wrote an article at citing him as one of the guys who they shouldn't sign. And, I mean, at that price, I don't think he'll ever be – he's getting, I believe, the second most money at the cornerback position behind Josh Norman. I don't think he's ever going to be the second best. I don't think he'll even be top five. But I think you are getting a guy who you can be confident will be somewhere top 20, maybe top 25. And I do think that his fit with the Jets, where Todd Bowles likes to press his corners a lot more, and with Trumaine being a really tall, really long corner who thrives with physical play, I think there's a potential he could get maybe a little bit better with the Jets. So, and I think it's the same we talked about a lot with Kirk Cousins. That's how the free agent market is. If you want a guy who is a proven, at least above average starter, you're going to, those guys who get on the market are going to get the most money they can possibly earn. So, and with the Jets just trying to help develop Jamal Adams, Marcus May, and invest in a guy in Morris Claiborne who's injury-prone, kind of inconsistent throughout his career. I think it'll help all those guys, but do I think Trumaine will ever be as good as his contract says he is? That I don't really think.
So let's move down. Morris Claiborne.
Yeah, Claiborne, I'm pretty – and I've only gone through one game post-injury, which is when we all thought he'd fall off. But before that, he's been as good as we kind of thought he was. Kind of similar to Trumaine. He hasn't given up a touchdown yet. He only has the one pick, but overall just a 75 passer rating allowed through his first 10 games. And that's really solid. He's only given up 36% of his targets for first downs, and that's better than any of the Jets corners or Trumaine Johnson. And his yards per attempt is pretty solid, 7.6. I think overall he's been pretty good for a number one guy who does not get a lot of help from the rest of this team. And the Jets were playing a kind of a weak quarterback and receiver schedule in the first half, but I think what they got out of Claiborne last year, if you project that to now playing next to Trumaine Johnson, I think that's really encouraging if Claiborne could stay healthy. So watching him again and charting his numbers has definitely made me think even higher of Claiborne.
Well, you know, maybe we'll have you on after the series, because as you mentioned, I think you're kind of just reaching the point now where we all thought Claiborne fell off, and that was my perception as well. So I think it'll be interesting at the end of the year whether all of our perceptions match the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I will say, though, that I did just today go through the Panthers game, which was Claiborne's first game back, full game back from injury, because he did play in the Tampa Bay game, but he left that one because of injury. But the Panthers game's his first full game back, and he was really good in that one. And, I mean, Cam Newton played a terrible game. Their receivers were pretty terrible in that game, but Claiborne in that game was not putting up numbers because of how bad the receivers were. He broke up 2 2-point attempts short of the goal line, and I believe he gave up 6 yards on 3 targets other than that, and they were actually good plays. So that was a good start, but we'll definitely check back and see how he finishes for the final quarter of the year.
Now let's go down the lineup a little bit to the guys under Claiborne, because this is one of my concerns, and it's kind of unknowable. I think this is always a concern when you don't have a particularly deep group of corners, is to what extent is the number one guy looking good because the other team's quarterbacks knows he can always get a completion against the two number three guys. So what do you think of the guys who were below Claiborne on the depth chart last year?
Yeah, I think the one guy who's really caught my attention way more than he did during the season, and for ways both positively and negatively, is Daryl Roberts. And the thing with Roberts is, right now, through the point I've looked, he has 48 targets on the season. That's 4 more than Claiborne, even though Roberts only played, I believe, about a third of the defensive snaps. So he's getting targeted a ton when he's out there. You could tell that teams are trying to go after him. And I think for the most part, he's been pretty solid. His passer rating to this point is only 87.2. And that's with two garbage time touchdowns. And you don't want to write those off, because if it's garbage time, then just don't get beat. But still, the only two touchdowns he's given up were garbage time touchdowns and wins. And other than that, only a 58% completion percentage. His first down rate is 38%, which is close to Claiborne's and better than the rest of the Jets corners. So I don't think he's great. I think it was definitely a good move for the Jets to not rely on him to be a starter. But if he's my third best guy, I'm definitely feeling better about that now than I would have if you asked me about him before going back into it. So he's been one of the bigger surprises from going back and looking at it.
That's fascinating. That almost makes me want to go back and take a look at him, because I really wasn't that impressed with him watching the games live, and B, when I reviewed. So now you're gonna get me to take a second look at him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, because he is playing mostly on the right side or the left side. Hold on, for Robert. Yeah, mostly on the left side, but. And against lesser receivers. But I think what he does well is the underneath stuff. He does tackle pretty good on those, so that keeps his yards and his first downs down pretty low. But he does have a tendency to kind of be over-aggressive and get beat over the top. And he did have a couple bad games where he gave up a little too many yards against guys you wouldn't want to get beat by. But I don't think he's that awful. I wouldn't say he's great, but I think he's a pretty average corner. And with him being the number three guy now next year, looking like, you should definitely go back and look. I'd love to hear what you think, because, like you said, just watching, he didn't seem that great. And I think that's because, like I said, he just gets targeted so much for how much he's out there. But I thought he kept the damage pretty low for the amount of times he's got targeted.
Let's go to one of the lightning rods for criticism of this team. And it's a guy I criticize quite a bit, Buster Skrine. Impressions on him.
Yeah, with Skrine, he's probably he's about as volatile as you can be. He had some really, really legitimately good games where he wasn't just benefiting from bad play. He was breaking up passes, like the New England game, the first New England game. I forget the exact numbers, but he had one interception. I know he had at least two pass breakups and the should-be interception that, at the time, we all kind of blamed as a pivotal play that kind of cost the Jets the game. And then the game after that, he gave up three touchdowns to the Dolphins in that blown loss. And he should have had another one in that game. So he's really volatile, but I think overall the negative outweighs the positive for him. He just gets beat to the middle way too often. He's extremely penalty prone. Right now I have, through this point, he has 9 penalties, and that's 4 more than anybody else, for 96 yards, which is twice as many as anybody else. And that's just in coverage, but... Yeah, overall for Skrine, he's good for some really – I think for every one really great game he gives you, he'll give you 2 really terrible games. And it'll be interesting to see if Perry Nickerson pushes him at all. But overall, Skrine, kind of watching him, charting the numbers, has kind of supported what we all kind of perceive from him.
Yeah, and you know, I was actually thinking this today, and it was actually more about Claiborne than it was Skrine. But I was thinking, you know, there are some guys who are like average because they'll give you something that's okay. You know, they'll never be great, they'll never be terrible. And then there are other guys who are kind of average because they'll be great 1 week, terrible the next week. And Skrine, I don't think Skrine's average, because I think you get more bad than good. But he's one of those guys who. He can go out and play a great game. He just can't do it consistently. He's not on. He's really not on.
Yeah, and that definitely goes into, like, what I've seen from watching play. You could have a game against New England, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, where he's all over the field breaking up passes, giving up absolutely nothing in his direction. And then the next game where you're playing against Matt Moore and Jay Cutler, and you're just a complete lightning rod for touchdowns. So it's... I think he definitely fits that description of a guy who can be great and then can be terrible. But overall, last year at least, the negative kind of outweighed the positive. And I do think that with the Jets' kind of lack of depth after Claiborne, Skrine was getting a few outside targets that he didn't really do as well as in the slot. But even in the slot, he was still giving up a lot of scores. So maybe he'll do better if he can stay strictly in the slot. But I don't think that was the problem. It was just kind of not good play, just plain and simple. So we'll see if he keeps his role for this entire season, which he probably will, because as much as I like Nickerson and a lot of people like him, it's kind of hard to expect him as a sixth rounder to push a veteran like Screen right away, but it'll be interesting to see.
Absolutely. And, you know, a guy like Screen, I think he's a guy who's so enticing because you watch one of those good games and it's great, and you try and talk yourself into it. You say, you know, if this guy can only play like that all the time, but at the same time, maybe he's just not talented enough to play it all that way all the time. Maybe he's talented to do that once a month or so. I always, this is the comparison I draw to another sport, the NBA. You know, Brandon Jennings once had a 55-point game. That doesn't mean he's talented enough to play like LeBron James all the time. And I think a guy like Screen, maybe people buy him a little too much, but, you know, he's been in the league a long time. And I think if it was going to happen, it probably would have happened already.
Yeah, that's definitely, and consistency is just one of the best. It's not really looked at as a talent, because when we think talent, we kind of think upside, what can someone do? But just as important as that is how often can they do it? And consistency comes from technique, it comes from discipline, and those are kind of things that Screen isn't as polished as you would think he should be.
Let's move beyond the corners. Let's talk about the other cover guys, safeties, linebackers.
For the linebackers, they've been really interesting to look at too. And DeMario Davis is a guy who, in his first Jets tenure, we knocked a lot for his coverage ability, but coming back last year, he had a really good year, and his pass coverage was part of that. Going back, we've always thought of him as more of a run defender than a pass defender, but his pass numbers are really solid last year. He only gave up, and most of his targets that I charted were just from the middle zone, taking on underneath stuff, not really that many man-to-man snaps, but he's only giving up 9 yards per completion. That is ridiculously low. That's by far the lowest of any of the guys on here that have played a legit amount of time, and only 31% of his targets for first downs. Those are really, really good numbers. And I think, and you wrote an article about this earlier in the offseason too, where the Jets kind of put him in a position where against the pass, he was really kind of taken away from where he could struggle and put in a position where he could succeed, just use that downhill ability to finish. And the numbers definitely kind of support the really positive perception we had of him last year.
Yeah, and the point I was making, it wasn't so much to knock Davis, it was to more praise the coaching staff, because they did a good job figuring out what he couldn't
right.
do. He, you know, for years, the Jets wanted him to develop into this elite cover linebacker, a guy who could take on Gronk, you know, a guy who could get the difficult matchups. And I think the coaching staff finally figured out, you know, we can't do this. This guy is not good enough, but he is good enough if we take something off his plate, give him less difficult assignments, and just let him make him think less, you know, let him play downhill against the run. And I think that, honestly, this is just a theory, but I think that helped him against the run. I think just taking those difficult assignments in the passing game off his plate made him more aggressive against the run, more able to make plays.
Yeah, there was no doubt that he definitely took advantage of that and was, in that role, a plus impact player against the pass. But I think the downside of that I've seen going through it is that, in turn, someone else has got to take on more responsibility. And that guy was, to me, most often Darren Lee. And he's just not been that impressive. He's been close on a few plays, but way too often just biting really hard on first downs, giving up wide open leaks out from running backs, and just getting beat man-to-man from tight ends. And I think he's a guy like Screen, too. We know Lee has athleticism. That's why he's picked in the first round. And you see that sometimes, but too many mental errors from him in coverage. And looking at his numbers, he has a 44% first down rate. That's the worst of any, other than Jamal Adams, that's the worst of any of the players at the top of this list in targets. And he is lucky, the one interception I have credited to him, that wasn't actually his. He was lucky with that one because that was a drop by his man in the Buffalo game. So overall from Lee, we definitely got to see progression from him next year. And I think whether or not he progresses in the pass game, just with technique and recognition stuff, if he can progress with that, I think that'll go a long way for the entire defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've not been a guy who's gotten on Lee his entire career. I've really like the draft pick. And even the first year during his struggles, I preached patience. But, I mean, at some point, it's got to turn on for him. And this second year, he just did not make the progress I was looking for. And most notably, I think the Jets drafted him because they thought he could be that type of cover guy we were talking about with the, what the Jets thought about Davis early in his career. And it just hasn't happened yet. And, I mean, I think I know a lot of people seem to feel he made a lot of progress, but I look at it and I look, I can forgive everything else, all the other flaws in his game, if he wasn't having so much trouble in coverage. Because that's really, I mean, that's really, I think, what the Jets took him to take those difficult matchups. And I just don't think it's happened for him just yet.
Yeah, that's kind of the worrying thing, because, like you said, that's one of the main reasons, maybe the main reason they drafted him. We know he doesn't have prototypical linebacker size or strength, even though he's probably a better run defender than pass defender at this point. But that's not really what they drafted him to be. They wanted him to be the guy who could allow a Demario Davis and what we're probably going to see next year, allow Avery Williamson, guys like that, to do their thing while Lee takes on the man-to-man assignments. But it's just too many mental and technique errors. And like I said earlier, he bit on a lot of play-action plays, giving up wide-open catches, and then too often just getting beat man-to-man by tight end. And he did have some plays where he was close, but and like with screen, like you said with screen, that it's late in his career and it hasn't happened yet. Maybe it's just not going to. But with Lee, it is. He was a young prospect, and this is only going to be his third season, so maybe the light will come on for him this year. So we can definitely give him a little more time for sure, because he does have special ability and athleticism, and we have seen that. In the game against the Patriots, he made a few pretty decent plays where Gronk just outplayed him. But that's what Gronk will do, as we know. But for the most part, you just want to see more progress from him next year.
Yeah, I agree with you that we need to give him more time, but I think it has to happen this year. I think, you know, you get three years in.
I'd agree with that.
There aren't many guys who go 3 years and improve markedly in year four and beyond. So it does happen occasionally, but I think this is the year. This has got to be, it's now or never for Lee.
Yeah, so, that's definitely, I would agree with that.
So let's talk about the two rookie safeties, impressions, Jamal Adams, Marcus May.
I think that definitely, and the numbers go with it too, just in terms of the attempts, that Adams is getting, he got a lot more man-to-man stuff than May did. May was pretty much primarily a deep safety who didn't get that much in terms of man-to-man. And overall from Adams, I think just looking at it, he might be the most disappointing of all the guys that I've looked at so far. I have him through, and this was kind of publicized, these numbers, with him being such a high-profile pick. But through this point, through the bye week, I have him down for 5 touchdowns already. That's the most on the team. And 4 of those were to tight ends. 2 of them were to Gronk. And just, and I do think, and we say this a lot, but I think he was really close on a lot of them, especially in the Patriots game with Gronk. There was pass interference that was kind of questionable, and there was another touchdown that he gave up where he just tripped over Gronk's foot. But at the end of the day, just when you're giving up 5 touchdowns as a safety who only covers tight ends on only 24 targets, too, that those numbers have got to be a lot better.
Yeah, the one caveat I'll say is I'll give him a pass for the Gronk game, because, I mean, I don't care how high you're drafted. I don't care how highly touted you are. You're going against Rob Gronkowski as a rookie. That's going to be a rough go of things, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely correct. But then when you look at the other touchdowns he gave up, there was one he gave up to another rookie, David Njoku, where he just completely overplayed the route and gave up space behind deep into the end zone. And then in the Miami game, he gave one up to Anthony Fasano on a pick play where, again, he just slipped. And I think that's another thing. I think he's slipping a little bit too much. I don't know what it is, maybe footwork thing, but way too many trips for him in coverage.
I'll give you another note. I'll give you a little preview of what you're going to see week 17, because the game, the Jets, between the Jets and the Patriots, I think it was New Year's Eve, Rob Gronkowski got shut out. So I think a lot of people, myself included, thought, wow, Jamal Adams shut out Rob Gronkowski. And then what you're going to see is that for the most part, the Jets bracketed him with Lee and Adams. So it wasn't Adams taking him one-on-one the second time. But that's just a little sneak preview of what you're in store for.
Yeah. And I do remember that one where Gronk was completely taken out, that one. I don't even think he got targeted in that game. But I think if you're he is the kind of guy who you want to do that against if you're going to commit two players. But again, we said with Lee, we said with Adams, this is kind of why they were drafted, to take these kind of plays and players away. So if Gronk is going to beat you, Gronk is going to beat you, but I don't really need to see touchdowns from rookies and 35-year-old tight ends week after week. So, and again, Adams is a really athletic guy, and I think football IQ isn't something that you would criticize him for. So those two things together give you the confidence that he'll really progress as his career goes on. And he's another guy who was a young prospect. So I'm really confident that Adams is going to improve, but I think his production and coverage last year was really overlooked as just pretty bad production overall, frankly.
How about Marcus May?
Yeah, May. I mean, I think for the most part, he does his job in coverage. His numbers aren't pretty, but that's just because when he does get targeted, it's going to be because he made a mistake and gives up a big play. So I think he's one of the guys who the numbers kind of say the least about, because his job is to take deep routes away. So when he is doing his job, he's not going to get credit for it. But when he's not doing his job, he's probably going to get knocked really bad on here. But for the most part, I think his instincts down the field are really good. He definitely helped out some of the other corners beyond Claiborne and did take away a lot of deep stuff. And I think when he's going, and we see it because we know his play against the run is so solid, when he's coming downhill, he can make some really good plays in space against the pass as well. But I don't think he's a guy who you're going to see a lot of man-to-man coverage from.
Well, I'll give you a little preview. I thought, and I'll be interested to hear your thoughts after you review, because I thought his December was really ugly after a really solid three quarters of the season.
Though.
But one thing I would note is that the deterioration in his play began right around the point the college season typically ends. So maybe it was a little case of hitting the rookie wall.
Yeah, I think the one game that comes to mind is the Kansas City game. I think he gave up two. I know at least one he gave up to Kelsey in the beginning. That was a complete blown coverage. And he might have had another one. I'm not sure. We'll definitely get to it. But, yeah, definitely I think over the first few quarters, maybe three quarters of the season, I was definitely thinking that May was maybe the best player in defense, definitely one of the best players, but he definitely kind of fell off at the end, so I'm interested to see how that shows up.
All right. Any final thoughts?
I think just looking at the numbers, there are some guys that have given me some more confidence. Just, I think Claiborne has really, he's kind of popped out that, I think last year, just looking at him, he was, like we thought, like they were playing bad quarterbacks. Maybe he's a little lucky. Maybe he's an outlier, but I think he's just consistently really outplayed and outshone everybody, outshined. I think he's really looked a lot better than everyone else, just side to side with him. And Tremaine Johnson and Claiborne together, I'm really excited to see what they do.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to it on iTunes or Spotify and leave it a good review if you enjoy it. Great day. We'll chat again next time.